C2SP. Number 6B.
We go on to the subtone of life. Spiritualism, with its material methods of communication, would destroy the omnipresence of spirit. So the omnipresence is life, life that is omnipresent, that is, and that pervades. Yeah. We read here, spiritualism, with its material accompaniments, would naturally destroy the supremacy of spirit. The moment we have a foreign element entering spirit, so that spirit is no more all in all, no more ever present, then it would destroy the omnipresence of spirit. But if spirit pervades all space, it needs no material method for the transmission of messages. Here again, we come to a point where perhaps we can learn something again, that we don't think that communication and transmission of communication can only be done through words, through the word and through the letter, through books and writings, that we also know that our consciousness can transmit messages, not material messages that a spiritual consciousness cannot do, but that it can transmit spiritual ideas, the influence of spiritual ideas, the pervasion of the whole world with spiritual ideas, and so awakening consciousness something new. Spirit needs no wires nor electricity in order to be omnipresent. She could also have said spirit actually needs no books, no words, no letters, no printing press in order to be omnipresent. So words and printing is just an approximation, a help, so to say, a material help to transmit ideas. But finally, Jesus never wrote books, and yet his ideas are still here. And we have to see, especially in practice, that we can see that because the patient is far away, he's not sitting always in the chair next to us, that we must reach him spiritually, and that we don't have to think because we can't talk to him and cannot flood him with a lot of words that we cannot reach him. We have to admit to ourselves that spirit transmits itself spiritually, and the more we really train ourselves or culture ourselves in that way, the more it is effective. We come to the tone of truth. Spirit is not materially tangible. How then can it communicate with men through electric material effects? Again, the same tone, that it cannot work through its opposite. How can the majesty and omnipotence of spirit be lost? See, we get nearer and nearer to a climax and says, well, how then can the majesty and the omnipresence and omnipotence of spirit be lost? Can spirit lose something that belongs to spirit? If spirit in the tone of life is omnipresent and cannot lose anything, then why should it need any material means for communication? God is not in the medley where matter cares for matter. In that medley we are. We usually are in that medley where matter cares for matter, and we think that matter must care for matter. When spiritualism makes many gods, and hypnotism and electricity are claimed to be the agents of God's government. So we can see there is only one agent in God's government, only one means through which it can operate, and that's the majesty, the omnipresence of spirit. So we had here the majesty of spirit, does not need material means in order to operate. And finally, the last stone of lover's love, spirit blesses man. That's love. But man cannot tell whence it comes. So that means through that spiritual communication, really we reach the whole world, and the individual man cannot tell from whence it comes. It doesn't come in a letter where we explain Christian Science. It does not come through a wire or a telephone where we explain the truth. It comes as a spiritual message. By it the sick are healed. We don't heal the sick through words, not even through a whole gushing exposition with words. They are healed, the sorrowing are comforted, and the sinning are reformed. And all that through spirit blesses it. That's the nice point, that the more we go on and the more we see through the claim of spiritualism, the more we feel that we have to talk little, say little to a patient, and that we reach him even better than with a lot of words. These are the effects of one universal God. You can see she rounds it up now with the universality of God, the invisible good dwelling in eternal science. And this is the end of the first part, giving a sense here that really spirit can bless men invisibly, without any material connotation, without any material means of transmission or anything, but just spirit through spiritual means blesses spiritually whoever is open to that message. Naturally, there must be an openness to that message, or we can't, or one can't hear it. It's like with the radio, the sender sends 24 hours a day, but if you don't turn on the radio, you don't hear anything. You have to turn on the wavelengths of the sender. You call it the sender, the radio station, radio station. If you turn on, you get it. If you don't turn on, you don't get it, but the sending is still there. So the whole world is always under the blessing of love, wanting to save us, and whoever tunes in into the same wavelength, into a spiritual wavelength, will receive it, will be blessed by it. That's why so often John Dolly would have said, no treatment is in vain. No treatment is in vain. Not even when the patient didn't get healed, it wasn't in vain. A truth can never be in vain. Whatever we are thinking is never, thinking spiritually, correctly, in science, is never in vain. It always blesses. This way or the other way. Yes. This is the tone of love. But I said, let's go over it again when we have done it, because we can see here perhaps very clear the climax of the whole sense of how to look at spiritualism. For instance, I like to look at it from the question, what spiritualism would like to accomplish. What is now, in this last tone, the plan of spiritualism? What does it really want to accomplish? We come to the plan, the goal, the aim of spiritualism, which is the tone of love. And when we read it through again, we would see that at the point of mind, spiritualism would like to do what? She said, to prolong the illusion of a material state of things, a material mind fettered by matter. That's what she said there. That's what spiritualism would like to do. Would really like to give us hell as long as possible, to keep always a mind fettered by matter. What did we see when we went through the subtone of spirit? Then we could see that what spiritualism would like to accomplish, again the goal, is that we would always return to an old standpoint of matter, that we constantly go back again to matter and return to matter, instead of going on from a material plane to a spiritual plane of thought. Then what would spiritualism do at the point of soul? It would really make us believe that the deflection and the distorted is the natural thing, that those gnarled oaks, those decaying flowers, that they belong to nature and that they are natural instead of unnatural. They want to say that the sinful, the defects are natural. Not the reflection are natural, but the defects are natural. So we say, well, that's natural. If something happens, we say, well, that's natural that that happened. It isn't natural. Whatever is erroneous is not natural. Or in principle, she was saying, well, the plane of spiritualism is really that we believe the communications of oracles, the communication from ignorance, that we believe that. That what the spirits tell us and teach us, that we believe that. That's what spiritualism wants to achieve. Or in life, that it wants really to deny the ever presence of spirit or life. That spirit would make us believe that this is right and this is natural, that we don't believe in the ever presence of spirit with a capital S. Then in truth it has said that the plane of spiritualism would really be that we communicate through material agents. Then the only agent we know is the Christ truth. That alone can communicate. That alone the message. The Christ is the divine message from God to man. And so we can use the Christ message. But spiritualism says we don't need the Christ. What we need is really a material agent, a material savior. When we come to the last tone of spirit of love, then there is no more a plane. There is nothing negative anymore. There is no more a facet of spiritualism, because there spiritualism is extinguished. So in this way you can ask various questions to the text. Or we can ask the very opposite question. I can say, what do these subtones tell us about spirit and not about spiritualism? What does spirit want to work out? What is the plane of spirit? And there we can see again how she deals with that question in every subtone. What is the plane of spirit? In mind, she shows there that spirit alone knows how to save us, when and how to save us. So we begin to see not we will know it, but that only the Father will know it, that he wants to save us, and he wants to save us anyhow, in spite of spiritualism. We get here a sense that spirit works in spite of spiritualism, against spiritualism, and that that plane cannot be a sidestep, that it's going to fulfill itself. So at the point of mind, she says, well, love wants to save us anyhow. We may not know how, but the Father knows it. In the subtone of spirit, it says that spirit will anyhow act so that we outgrow material spiritualism. Either here or hereafter, spirit will be that forcible factor that will act so that we outgrow spiritualism anyhow, so why not do it right now? Why wait and wait and wait? Then in soul, it says that really spirit works so that the unnatural deflections of mortal mind are anyhow not realities, not natural realities. So we don't need really to be foxed by it and say and think that something is going wrong. That we neither really, all these material things are anyhow not spiritual realities. And so they have to recede anyhow. She says, well, in principle, that spiritualistic oracles are anyhow absurd. So why listen to them? It's no use. In life, she says that spirit is anyhow ever present. No matter if spiritualism says no, they are not present. Spirit, that cannot change anything. They are anyhow ever present. And we have to see that. And truth says, well, spirit is anyhow omnipotent and needs no other agent. It's anyhow the Christ to every situation. And in love, she says that spirit is anyhow omni-blessing. You can't stop that. You cannot stop the blessing of spirit, love. Yes. Or I was asking myself, what does she say about spiritualism that is presented here as a curse? Why spiritualism without fulfillment? And again, we can go through that sense and say, why doesn't spiritualism bring us fruits, and why doesn't it bring us forward? And so she depicts here spiritualism as a real curse. Namely, it says in mind, spiritualism is of no advantage. It is not desirable, anyhow. In the subtone of spirit says, well, spiritualism is just wretched. It's a wretched purgatory. It's hopeless. It's hell. In soul it says, well, spiritualism is actually unnatural, is a falsity, a deflection. So it's no good at all. Or in principle it says spiritualism is not reasonable. It's not scientific. It's absurd. She uses the term absurd. It's pernicious in tendency. In life, she says, well, spiritualism is destructive. It's not constructive, it's destructive. And in truth, she says, well, spiritualism just makes many gods, that's all. So, as you go through these tones, ask questions. You know, just don't only read line after line, but when one has an overall view of a subject, ask questions that relate naturally to the subject, not any old question, but naturally a question that relates to the subject. And so one builds up a much clearer sense of what the subject wants to tell us if we put just a specific aspect into the subject and ask these questions. Yes. Well, that's the first part. Now, we have seen quite a lot about that first part, which I just want to summarize quickly and just see what have we seen in a big line. So I go quickly over the main subject, not the subtype, not the subtones, but over the main subject. What have we seen? What is the claim of spiritualism? The first part only gives an analysis of spiritualism. That's all. Doesn't yet go further than that. That's the second and third part that goes further than that. So it gives an analysis and says, what is really the main claim of spiritualism? In the subject of mind, we have seen the main claim is that there are more than one spirit, that there are spirits many, that spiritualism is actually a belief and builds on a belief. What is their claim in spirit, in the second one? It was the claim of mediumship, that there is a bridge between opposites, that opposites mingle, that opposites work together. It's a kind of mediumship. In the subject of soul, it was shown that spiritualism believes in retrogression, instead of going forward, always falling back to the old. And therefore that regression and retrogression, that relapse, that recurring of the old evil, all that was shown there. Then in the Dawn of Life, it was shown that really the claim of spiritualism is that matter can rise to a spirit, that matter can be resurrected as spiritual life, that mortals can become immortals. That's another claim of spiritualism. At the point of truth, we could see that spirits are never a savior, that they are, that understanding is a savior but not spirits, that they cannot save us. So that spiritualism is never a help, never a healer, never a savior. And finally, Mrs. Eddy shows in the last subject of love, really, that spiritualism is absolutely fruitless, that it is just hell, that it is doom, that it is wretchedness, that it is pernicious in tendency. So we step by step debunk the claim of spiritualism. What then could we see that this whole part is teaching us positively, instead of seeing it from the point of view of spiritualism? We can ask ourselves now, what is the positive aspect within those subjects? And there we could perhaps see something very high, a high standard in it, and can see instead of just analyzing the wrong sense, we can analyze the absolute sense in it and work with the absolute sense in it. There we could say, well, if God or the seven synonymous terms represent really the infinite, the one spirit, the infinite spirit, then that synonymous term could never really tolerate or deny even its opposite, because if a synonymous term that, or let's say so, that if the synonymous term represent the signs of spirit, the signs of spiritual reality, then if the synonymous term would tolerate an opposite, which is spiritualism, then those synonymous terms would have no identity, and they would lose the identity of being. They would no more be. So we can go and tackle the whole sense of spiritualism from a higher standpoint, and could say, well, and I go through the synonymous term, and I could see, well, if mind, if divine mind, which is infinite, if that could create or tolerate something that is finite, then that mind would lose its identity and would no more be infinite mind. Can you see that? So I handle spiritualism from a higher standpoint than the text does. And I can see, if spirit, which is the only, the one and only, if that spirit could in some way tolerate something besides itself and could therefore communicate with something foreign than spirit, then spirit would lose its identity as omnipresent spirit. Or you go to soul and you could see, if soul, which is the identity of being, if that could tolerate, so to say, a retrograde step, a falling away from the unchangeability of soul, then soul would actually no more be soul, then it would no more be the unchangeability and immortality of soul. So can you see how I build it up and say, if, I would always say, so if life, which is deathless, if that would tolerate a sense of death and would therefore tolerate and mingle with death or use death, its opposite, for life, then life would lose its identity and would deny that it is deathless, that life is eternal. And so I ponder that about truth, and I ponder about truth and say, well, if truth is always the scientific fact about everything, and if that would tolerate error in any way and would not, say, stamp error as error and would not let error destroy itself, then that truth would actually deny its nature, its identity, and would no more be that consistent, all-dominating truth. It would lose its identity. Can you see what I do? I see that the synonymous term cannot lose its identity. That if a synonymous term would mingle with something that is foreign to the synonymous term, then that synonymous term would destroy its identity and would no more be that synonymous term. So I can see, for instance, then to life, and would see, well, no, to love I come. If love, which is universal blessing, absolutely universal blessing we have seen, if that would tolerate anything else next to love, that, say, would tolerate something that is wretched, that is a purgatory, that is hell, if that would tolerate that and use that as its means, then love would destroy its identity, would deny its identity, could no more be all-inclusive love. It would be a partial love, no more all-inclusive love. So that whole first part is a terrific part when you lift it out of the argumentation why spiritualism is nothing. The text in the textbook gives us the argumentation why spiritualism is wrong and why only there is one spirit. Having once seen through that argumentation, you don't need it anymore, and you can lift it up to the synonymous term and see, I handle spiritualism by seeing mind cannot tolerate anything besides itself, or it would lose its identity of being, would no more be mind. If spirit would tolerate anything next to spirit, it would no more be spirit, it would deny that it is spirit, the omnipresence of spirit. That soul, if it would have anything next to itself, which is not of the nature of soul, and communicate with it, it would deny itself and would no more be the identity of soul. It would deny itself. And so you build up a real sense that a synonymous term, so to say, keeps its identity, retains its identity, because it cannot tolerate something besides itself. The moment it would, that's the claim of spiritualism, tolerate something besides itself, it would destroy itself and deny itself. And that is not possible. Yes. Okay.